broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University. This is WSDL Ocean City 90.7 FM, Delmarva Public Radio. It's time now for a special writer's edition of Delmarva Today with host Harold Wilson.
In just spring, when the world is mud-licious, the little lame balloon man whistles far and wee, and Eddie and Bill come running from marbles and piracies, and it's spring, when the world is puddle-wonderful. The queer old balloon man whistles far and wee, and Betty and Isabel come dancing from hopscotch and jump rope, and it's spring, and the goat-footed balloon man whistles far and wee. E.E. Cummings, 100 Selected Poems. Welcome to Delmarva Today, Writer's Edition. I'm your host, Harold Wilson. Writer's Edition is on the road today in the Talbot County Library, and we're talking about children's literature in anticipation of the June 16 Chesapeake Children's Book Festival in Easton, Maryland. My guests are Tim Young, organizer of the festival, and an author in his own right, and Laura Powell, children and young adult services librarian at the library. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're happy to be here.
I know that E.E. Cummings' poem, In Just Spring, is not a children's poem as such, but I opened with it here because it does capture the wonderful color, expressions, rhythm, music, images, and wordplay found in all good children's literature. In addition, as in all good literature, there is in Cummings' little poem that shadowy element lurking about to poke out and tease out and awaken us to the darker side of life. It would have been enough if all Cummings had given us in his wonderful image of spring coming, but who is calling for the children from their play? It is the goat-footed balloon man whistling far and wee. For the children, the goat-footed balloon man might be something exciting. For us, he might just be something a little more ominous. E.E. Cummings was a master of language. And what is language but the unique ability to shape ideas, events, and images in our own and in other people's minds to bring excitement, joy, and sorrow simply by making noises with our mouths. We can cause new ideas and opinions to form in each other's minds with these strange sounds. In fact, we are hardwired for language. And in this, we are unique. We babble and experiment with sounds as infants, and can communicate in a mix of understandable sentence structures by the time we're about 3 years old. Language makes us unique. It's what we build on, and the characteristic highlights the importance of children's literature. Tim, this is the third year in a row you've put together the Chesapeake Children's Book Festival here in Easton. Tell us a bit about the festival and why it's important to you.
Well, it's important to me personally, as it gives me a chance to bring to my community many of the authors that I've been privileged to meet in my travels in the last decade that I've been a published author. I've had the opportunity to visit many towns and cities that have book festivals and realize what a great thing it is for the community to have authors visit, to have the children come and meet some of the people who've written the books that they love, get a chance to actually shake their hand, get an autographed book from them. And it's just a wonderful thing for a town to have a book festival.
Well, what age group does the festival focus on?
We start pretty young. You know, we have some books that are good for toddlers and very young preschool kids, all the way through elementary school and into middle school. We started the first festival, we had some young adult authors, but we didn't find enough teenagers came. So we're mostly focusing on the younger kids.
And what kind of books are you setting out for them?
We have quite a few books. We have books for very young kids. We have books that are biographies of famous people. We have one book about Harriet Tubman by Carol Boston Weatherford, who is actually an author with local ties. We have a book about Grace Hopper, the Queen of Computer Code, by Lori Walmark. We also have books that are just fun, like Storm Song by Nancy Viu. And we have a book called This Is Not a Normal Animal Book, which is by Julie Siegel Walters, which is a very silly book. And Jonathan Roth, who's an author from Washington, D.C., will be bringing his two brand new books called Beep and Bob. They're part of a series about space travel. So we have a lot of different kinds of books.
Well, speaking of famous people, isn't there something about Frederick Douglass now associated with the festival?
Yes, since this is his 200th birthday, the festival is joining forces with the Juneteenth celebration at the Academy Art Museum. So this year, instead of having the festival in the library, we're going to have the authors in the Armory Building, the Waterfowl Building, across the street from the Art Academy. And we also have an illustrator who did this wonderful book called Frederick's Journey, The Life of Frederick Douglass, and he'll be here as well to help us celebrate Frederick's 200th birthday.
Well, Tim, the program will be heard by some people outside of the Delmarva area. Why is Frederick Douglass important to this area?
Well, he was born here in Talbot County on the Tuckahoe River. He began his life here as a young boy, which he then later wrote about in slavery, escaped from slavery when he was a young man, educated himself, learned how to read, and became an incredible author and statesman and orator. And he came back to Talbot County himself in his later life to kind of patch things up, make amends with the people who had enslaved him. He was an incredible man for his time, and so we celebrate him here, especially as one of our most famous sons.
Have you written anything about Frederick Douglass, Tim, yet?
No, well, I tend to write pretty silly stories, so I don't know if I'm the person to write about Frederick.
All right. Well, we're going to come back and talk about your work in just a minute. But Laura, before I turn to you, Tim, at the festival, what kind of programs do you offer the visitors to the festival?
Well, on the Children's Book Festival side of things, we will have our authors, many of whom will be reading their books. That will have like certain time periods, about 20 minutes each, for some of the authors to read and do presentations about the books. And of course, people will be able to go around and get autographed copies and talk to the authors individually. And then we also have, on the Juneteenth side of things, there will be music, there will be speakers, there will be food available outside on the street in front of the Art Academy. So there will be a lot of things for people to do and see.
Laura, your children and young people's librarian here at the Talbot County public library, free public library, I believe it is, maybe. What kind of programs do you have here at the library, and what is your relationship to the book festival as well?
Okay. We, the library offers a fantastic summer reading program. And that is, the festival is the kickoff event for our annual summer reading program, and a continuation of the year-long celebration of Frederick Douglass's bicentennial. So we've been all year long, we've been celebrating Frederick Douglass. We had a Read Across America, and so this is a continuation of that. Our summer reading program is a fantastic way to make friends and enjoy reading and participate in library programs, and we've got many special programs throughout the summer for children that are available, and all the programs are free and open to the public. Registration for the summer reading program begins June 1st, and that you can do online at our website, www.tcfl.org, or you can come in person and register. You can register for summer reading at the festival. We're going to have computers set up, and people can register right there at the festival. Summer reading runs from June 1st to August 16th, and this year one of our big sponsors is Maryland 529, and as part of the end of our summer reading program, we have a grand prize drawing, and this year it's going to be, just like last year, $529 toward a college savings plan with Maryland 529. For the festival, Talbot County Free Library received federal and state monies and is generously supported by the Friends of the Talbot County Free Library. And this generous funding helped us procure some big ticket items. This year's festival will have a keynote speaker. Carol Boston Weatherford is an award-winning children's author and professor of English at Fayetteville State University in North Carolina. And so she will be with us speaking. We, again, as Tim said, we're going to have food, music, speakers, story time, tent, and a lot of fun.
Mention the free books.
And the free book. Oh, yes. So if you register for our summer reading program, you will get a voucher for a free book by one of the festival authors, and you can go and have it signed by them. That is a special feature of the festival. We also have, the library's role continues. We have, we're as a collaborator, the classic adage, it takes a village to raise a child, is particularly true and seen at this event. This is a village event, and the library has gathered many community partners that will be joining us for the festival. The Judy Center will be there, and you can make a book with them. Talbot County Public Schools will be represented there. The Country School, Imagination Library, and Maryland 529 College Savings Plan, which I mentioned before, and our Friends of the Library will all be there, and they'll have special activities, and also you can learn more about what services they offer in the summer. So it's a great way to kick off your summer.
Do you have Tim's books in your library?
Absolutely, we do. Tim is actually going to be doing a program this summer, a drawing program, which is he's going to be teaching young children aged 6 to 16 how to draw creatures, aliens, monsters, and that should be really fun.
Well, Tim, tell us a little bit about your writing your books. How did you get started writing children's books?
Well, it was something, I've always loved children's books. I've had this really long career in the arts doing animation and puppet building and model making and sculpting for toys. But I always had this desire to do children's books. So I thought I had good ideas, but I didn't think I was a writer. I kind of thought that somebody else would say to me, well, you have really good ideas, I'll write them for you and you do the pictures. And that guy never showed up, so I had to kind of figure out how to do it. And so I just started attempting to write, and I showed it to a number of people and they seemed to like what I was doing, and I got really lucky in that about a year and a half after I started trying to get some books together, I got published, and that was 10 years ago this summer. And as of this summer, I have 10 books out, with two more coming out in the fall. So I'm pretty happy with the trajectory that my writing career has taken.
Well, what are the themes that you focused on? I did a little bit of research, and I looked to see what the general themes of children's literature are, particularly looking at the classics. And what are the themes that you focus on, Tim, in your writing?
I have a lot of books with monsters in them. I tend to write stories about things that I've always loved. I mean, I'm basically a big kid who gets to do what he enjoyed as a kid now as my career. So I write stories about monsters. I write stories about aliens. I have stories about silly animals. I have a book called The Angry Little Puffin, about a puffin who gets upset because everyone thinks he's a penguin. And it's funny because I write these stories to amuse people, but somehow, accidentally, they kind of contain little, I don't know, like, I try never to hit anyone over the head with a moral. But they seem to be about, like, the puffin story is about recognizing who you are and appreciating that somebody else may recognize you for who you are. So I don't know. I just kind of slip things in there subconsciously that seemed to have a good message. And people point out to me, they say, like, hey, did you know this book was about that? And I would say, really? Okay, I guess.
Laura, are there any particular themes that you find expressed in the books going out of the library these days? I know that primarily it's the parents who, unless there's a lively picture or something for the children, or maybe I'm wrong there. Is it? Let me ask. Is it the parents who generally pick the books for the children that come out of the library? And is there a more popular theme that you see going out these days?
Okay, well, it's both the parents and the children. You see, sometimes a parent will come with an agenda of what they would like to show or share with their child, maybe something that they read when they were young, often that's the case, or something they read about in the paper, some interest that they know the child has, and they help them to find the books on that. Sometimes, and this happened the other day, the parent came in and said, you know, my son wants books on dinosaurs and using the potty, you know, like, he was very specific, but they had asked the child ahead of time, what do you want? And so then you can help find them. And just as often, a child will come into the library knowing just what they want to read about. You know, I want to know about worms, or I saw that spider in the hallway, and I want a book on tarantulas. And then they also somehow intuitively know when you show them a book, because it's like a matchmaking that happens. You know, you hear what they're looking for, and then you go to the shelves, and you say, how does this look? And then the child usually looks at it and knows whether it's going to work or not. And then they're like, no, I want to look at another one, you know. So you keep going, and the child intuitively can find the one that will work for him or her.
Well, Tim, I think, Tim, why do you write about monsters? What happened in your childhood reading that brings you to monsters and to the children who read your books? What are these monsters saying to them? Now, I know the theme of self-awareness, and I'm assuming in your book self-acceptance goes along with that. And those are crucially important themes for young people to grasp. But how do you convey that with monsters? And I haven't read your books, but I assume they are purple and green and all kind of different colored monsters here.
They are. I think my fascination with monsters started at an early age because I was scared of them, because they were these big, scary things. And I imagined them everywhere. I saw them in the shadows in my bedroom. I now have a book called Shadows on My Wall, which covers that. I thought they were behind my house and under my bed. And so I learned over time that they were pretend, that they were imaginary, and that I was in control of them. So if I thought of a monster and I was scared of it, if I simply made it do something silly, then I was no longer scared. And so that's really a big part of the stories that I tell. They're, you know, again, I focus more on the humorous aspects of them, but I do want children to, I don't write books to scare kids, although there may be some tension in them. They have a very funny ending usually that makes the kid feel good about, like, you know, that he's, you know, in control of the situation.
Tim, you brought some books with you. Could you pick one of those monster books and maybe read a few pages to us?
Well, I can. If I pick this one, I have to read it till the end, because if you don't get to the end, then it won't make sense.
Tim, read it to the end. We have time.
It's short. This one's called They're Coming, and this one is a book about all of the monsters from the monster movies that I watched when I was too young to be watching monster movies. They're coming. The creepy fiends that emerge at twilight. They're coming. The slimy things from the deep, dark waters. They're coming. The awful beasts in the misty moonlight. They're coming. They're coming. They're coming. The evil creatures who lurk in foggy streets, they're coming. The magical ones that swoop and soar, they're coming. The restless ghouls from their grim graveyards, they're coming, they're coming, they're coming. The vengeful ghosts that haunt the frightful woods, they're coming. The ancient dead from dusty hidden tombs, they're coming. The eerie giants that dwell in dark forgotten forests, they're coming. They're coming. They're coming. They're coming. They're coming to my party. Are you coming?
Tell us a little bit about the art in that story, because as dark as the story is, the art is as dark as well. Those are wonderful.
It is.
Deep colors you've got there.
All of the monsters are depicted in silhouette against a moonlit sky. And that's kind of how the story started, is I have this picture of a werewolf in front of the moon. And that was the first image I drew from the book. And it was really done for as like a Halloween greeting card for some friends of mine. And I really liked it a lot. And so I started drawing some other monsters in front of the moon. And then I thought, well, all these monsters are out on the same night. Where are they all going? Naturally, they're going to a party. So that was how this story came about.
Yeah, that's a wonderful book, Tim. Just a wonderful book. And I would ask you this question, but I'm going to ask Laura as well. Laura, you just listened to Tim read that book in his wonderful theatrical voice, which is terrific. What is your reflection on that story? What does that story say to you and in your experience in the library? What do you think the children will experience from Tim's book?
Well, what it says to me when I first saw Tim open the book and look at the page and hear him read it, it reminded me of that awful program I used to watch as a child, which I shouldn't have watched, with a hand coming out of the ground. And so...
We grew up in the same area.
Okay.
Chiller Theater.
That's it. Chiller Theater. Horrifying. So I think it puts you on the edge, and I imagine a child might have this, where they can experience being a little bit of afraid, And they've been afraid before. They've had a nightmare before. They've had something really scary happen, even maybe during the day. So it gives them a safe place if they're in the library or in the lap of someone who loves them and they're having this experience of this story. They can feel a little bit afraid, but they're comfortable. So I think it can transform their fear. And there's the unexpected, like you don't know what's going to happen. So that helps them to stay curious. And I think when any of us are experiencing fear, it's important to stay curious because we don't know for sure. It might have a happy ending.
Well, there's a wonderful twist at the end of that story, Tim. And what I'm hearing is that I can just imagine reading that story, and like you said, Laura, there's this eerie sense of fear, and you want that. That's what you're generating with both the pictures and the words, and also the deep voice, Tim.
It helps, I have to say.
But then all of a sudden, there's a wonderful twist at the end, and I can imagine the young children just giggling then. When the fear is dissipated and you realize, oh, it's totally something else. It isn't what I thought at all.
It's wonderful for me because what I do a lot of now is I travel around the country to many schools and do presentations. And even though it's now one of my oldest books, it has such a great audience reaction at the end that I do include it every time I do a reading. Because of that, because the kids are, you know, sitting on the edge of their seat wondering what's going to happen, and then the relief and the laughter at the end is just so wonderful.
Well, children, let me ask it this way. What moral, what lesson, what, and I'm groping for the right word, I don't know, but what do children, do you believe, take from this book? And what do you want for them to take from this book?
That's a pretty tough question. I suppose that the answer is that I want them to realize that their fears are not always justified, that they may think something is awful and bad, but it turns out to be wonderful and fun and good. And to think that, you know, using your imagination is really, if you're scared, you're scaring yourself, you know, so you can turn it around and make yourself laugh at something that you think might be frightening otherwise.
I love that. That's great, because that's exactly how it is. You're scared, and then all of a sudden you're laughing at the thing you thought was scary, and it does dissipate the fear.
The other thing that I think is kind of the subtext underneath all of that for children, and maybe not conscious for them, but that I think nonetheless is important, and that is that life is not always what you think it is, that you may have everything all figured out, but life has a way of bringing something different to you. And I think that kind of reality is something important for children to learn. What would you think, Laura?
Oh, definitely. We just read a story called The Rabbit Listened, which is a new children's literature book. And in this story, the boy builds a beautiful castle out of blocks, and it's gorgeous, it's immense. And out of nowhere, a flock of blackbirds swoops in and, you know, crashes into the whole thing, and it's destroyed and it's gone. And the rest of the story is about different animals coming in an attempt to help the boy feel better about what just happened. And the one that ends up, some of them are like the bear came and he wanted the boy to vent his anger, but the boy didn't feel like it. And the ostrich came and said, let's pretend it didn't happen, you know. And the chicken was like, let's talk about it. And the boy didn't want to talk about it. And the elephant said, let's remember it. Come on, exactly how was it? You know, exactly how did you build that? And he didn't, and none of those things were making the boy feel better. And so, but the rabbit came at the end and just sat there right next to him and listened. And the boy wanted him to stay. And he just said, I want you to stay. And the rabbit stayed, and he just listened to the boy. Whatever the boy said, the rabbit didn't say anything. He just listened. And after a while, the boy felt better and felt he could make a new building. And the children loved that story. They listened to it with rapt attention. So I think that really spoke to a need where things happen out of the blue. You don't expect birds to come in and destroy your building that you just made, you know. And what do you do about it? So...
We have three young people who have joined us as well, and they are going to read to us from their favorite books. And let me begin with you, Gabby. Tell me, how old are you, Gabby?
I am 8.
What's the name of your book?
We Are in a Book.
We're in a Book. Okay. Go ahead and read to us then, Gabby.
Oh, I have a great idea. I can make the reader say a word. You can make the reader say a word? I can. If the reader reads out loud, this is a good idea. That is a funny idea. Here I go. Ahem. Banana. Ha 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 ha. Did you hear that? The reader said, banana! Ha 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 ha. Ugh, the reader said it again. Banana. So funny.
Gabby, why is that your favorite book? I think it's wonderful, frankly, but why do you like it?
I like it because it's like, the characters are talking to you in real life.
Oh, that's wonderful, wonderful. Let me turn now to Walker. Walker, how old are you, Walker?
7.
You're 7. All right, Walker, what book did you bring to us today?
I Am a Bunny.
A bunny, all right. Would you read to us from your book, Walker?
Mm-hmm. I'll read 2 pages.
Okay, Walker, read 2 pages to us, maybe even 3.
I am a bunny. My name is Nicholas. I live in a hollow tree. In the spring, I like to pick flowers. I chase the butterflies, and butterflies chase me. I like to watch the frogs in the pond. When it rains, I keep dry under a toadstool. I blow the daylight seeds into the air. In the fall, I like to watch the leaves falling from the trees. I watch the animals getting ready for the winter. And when the winter comes, I watch the snow falling from the sky. Then I curl up in my hollow tree and dream about spring.
Walker, what a wonderful book and so well read. Oh, that's excellent. Why, Walker, why do you like this book about a bunny?
Because it tells you the different, seasons.
Oh, you get to see the seasons that the bunny lives through. Oh, that's wonderful. Now we also have Rooney with us. Rooney, how old are you?
I'm 8.
You're 8. Rooney, what book did you bring?
The Day the Crayons Came Home.
Okay. Would you read to us from your book, Rooney?
Mm-hmm. One day, Duncan and his crayons were happily coloring together when a strange stack of postcards arrived for him in the mail. Hi, Duncan. It's me, Neon Red Crayon. Remember that great vacation we had with our family? Remember how we laughed when we drew a picture of your dad's sunburn? Remember dropping me by the hotel pool when you left? Clearly, you did not, because I'm still here. How could you miss me? Anyway, after 8 months waiting for you to come and get me, I guess I'm walking back. Your left behind friend, Neon Red Crayon. Dear Duncan, looks like I'm almost home. Been through China, Canada, and France, I think. Just crossing New Jersey by camel now. New Jersey has a lot of giant pyramids, right? See you soon, Neon Red Crayon. P.S. Next stop, the North Pole, I think. Duncan, greetings from the Amazon rainforest. Making great time, I think. I'm almost home, Neon Red Crayon. Duncan was so sad to learn that all of his crayons had lost, forgotten, broke, or neglected.
Go ahead.
Over the years, so he ran around gathering them up. But Duncan's crayons were all so damaged and differently shaped that they used to be that they no longer fit in the crayon box, so Duncan had an idea. He built a place where each crayon would always feel at home.
Why do you like this book? Why is this your favorite book about crayons and Duncan?
Because all the crayons are so funny and they each have something to say.
Yeah, isn't that funny that that crayons can talk as well as make beautiful pictures? Listen, you guys are terrific readers. Thank you. Thank you very, very much for coming in to read from your favorite book for us. Thank you. Aren't these children excellent?
Laura, another question, actually, for you. I was visiting a nephew a while back, and he has a two-and-a-half-year-old son. And this boy had a tablet, and he was playing all kind at two-and-a-half. He was playing all kind of simple games with animals and so forth on this tablet, you know, swiping everything away. And when my older grandchildren come over, and you've seen the satire on television, it's almost impossible to get their noses out of their iPhones and their tablets. What kind of competition are these electronic devices giving the reading public these days, the reading children? Do you find here in the library a lot of competition with them?
Well, that's a great question, and a lot of people are wondering about that. But books are very popular. And children naturally, they love books. They come in, they are drawn to the books, they have pictures, you don't need a cord, you don't have to plug it in, you don't have to worry about it dying halfway on the road trip. It's a complete wonderful object that works no matter what, no matter where you are. So the book is still, in my opinion, it rules. And children absolutely love them. They will come, they'll hand a book to you or their caregiver, and they'll say, please read this to me. And they will, I think, prefer to be read to. It's different depending on the age of the child and what's happening. Tablets are, there are many good educational games on them. It might be good for a particular activity, but I don't see the two as in competition. There are two different activities. And a book, though, is something that I think is more easily a shared experience with somebody else, which makes it uniquely pleasant and pleasurable.
Are there children's books on tablets where, you know, you flip a page?
We actually have those. We have launch pads, and they have books preloaded.
Are they popular?
They are. And there's nothing else on them except books and educational games, so they are popular, yes.
When I first got published 10 years ago, it was around the same time that the iPads were coming out, and people were saying, oh, this is the death of books, and they're all going to be gone within a decade or more. And that's just not happened with children's books especially. People really do want to have a physical book in their hand when they're reading to a child. If anything, children's books are experiencing another golden age right now. Now, if you want to read a novel or a romance book, it doesn't matter whether it's on a printed page or on a screen. But having an actual physical book in your hands with a child on your lap, there's no replacing that with a tablet.
Well, I would happen to agree with you, having read all these years to my children. Well, how do you think, you know, when I was first reading to Marilyn and my children, it was Goodnight Moon, which I think is still popular, a classic. It was The Cat in the Hat. It was Dr. Seuss. And I asked Marilyn, you know, what, remind me what we read. It's been a while. And she said, oh, Dr. Seuss. It's all Dr. Seuss. Has children's literature changed over the last 10, 15 or so years? And if it has, how has it changed?
Okay, well, that's a great question. Of course, everything changes. And children's literature, the classics that you mentioned are still popular. Some of the ones are on our the best children's literature for fostering empathy and social skills in children, such as Peter Rabbit by Beatrice Potter. So the classics are still popular. In addition to that, we have new children's literature, which that does speak to the current social issues or experiences that we're having today.
Now, what do you mean? I can come up with all kind of current social issues. Okay. I'm not sure you deal with them with children's literature. Laura, when you say current social issues, what are you referring to?
Well, there are more books about kindness, bullying, sharing. Those themes are really, really popular now. That's what I mean. So underneath it, you've got a story that's like all children's literature that explains your human experience or gives you a way of understanding what is happening in your life situation or someone else's, right? And that is good literature is beautiful. It's also true and good and helps you make sense of your experience. That remains the same, but on top of it, it's kind of like a flavor. So I would say that current children's literature has a flavor of what we're experiencing today.
And how would you characterize that?
Well, and I do see a lot of books on cultivating compassion and kindness and sharing and what to do with a bully. I see a lot of that now.
This sounds like when Tim read his book and when he talked earlier, he was talking about self-acceptance and knowing who you are, which is a very internal, a very personal thing. What I hear you saying is a kind of stories on how to conduct yourself in interpersonal relationships. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, that is. Yes, that is a big function of storytelling. Is the social skills, the language experience, but also cultivating empathy.
Mm-hmm. So children, to some extent, and I don't know if you hit this theme or not, Tim, is just basically how to get along with each other on a personal level. You mentioned kindness, you mentioned empathy. Do you deal with those themes at all? Tim?
Again, I try not to be too heavy-handed in trying to teach a moral lesson, but I think most children's literature, in one way or another, it reflects our society. And so what's being published today it's not, and I'm not saying like, oh, it's about, you know, my first iPhone. It's about relatable things in a child's life. And a lot of authors, I mean, there are millions of children's books, and some have stood the test of time and become classics, and there are new ones that are equally as good and hopefully will be around 30, 40 years from now. And then there are others that come and go. But the nice thing is there's always a book that's going to be somebody's favorite book. And it doesn't matter whether it's a well-known book or if it's even a good book. If a child loves that book, they're going to love that book and they're going to want to hear it over and over and over again because they connect with it in some way.
Well, I can identify with that. We have some books that turned to rags when, by the time that the children got through asking for them, oh no, good night moon, you know, do that one. So I can understand. I can understand that, and I also, you know, bullying has been in the news an awful lot, so I can understand. Children's books and the importance of children's books, but I'm intrigued by the fact that in this conversation anyway, we sort of moved from the personal self-acceptance and understanding what life is like your monsters that you can deal with these to interpersonal relations, and it makes you think to some extent that children are not learning this anywhere else.
I don't know. I think they are learning.
It's a hard question, and it's a little prejudicial. But see if you can respond.
But I think
anyway.
Books are a fabulous avenue for learning about life, about people, about getting along. They're also a great way to imagine and cultivate creativity, to explore concepts, things that you might want to try, but aren't, you know, maybe you don't feel courageous enough, and reading a story about it might give you the inspiration and the encouragement to go ahead and do that thing you've been thinking about. So.
Well, I started the program with E.E. Cummings' little poem, Just Spring. And we recognize that this is not a children's poem particularly, but for me it has the elements of good children's poetry. Mudlicious, puddle, wonderful. I mean, come on, these are great words. But the goat-footed Balloon Man gives some indication that there might be something ominous about this calling. Now, my daughter teaches literature at Old Dominion University, and I asked her about this poem. And she said, well, the goat-footed Balloon Man freaked me out when you read the poem to me when I was a child. And you just read it again, and it still freaks me out. So we had a long conversation about who the goat-footed Balloon Man might be and why he's calling the children and why he's in that poem. And we're not going to deal with that today. But what it comes up with, and oddly enough, what it made me think of, is that in most good literature, children's literature or not, there's a thread of reality or a little thread of darkness that runs through that. And I'll give you a simple example that came to me was Peter Rabbit. What is Beatrix Potter's little story is the subtext for me, and both of you and your expertise can disappear, But the subtext over and over is that the world is a dangerous place. And you had better mind what your mother tells you about Mr. McGregor's garden out there. And I think that it's a classic and it will last forever, because anybody who reads it with any insight, I think, realizes fairly quickly that Peter is in a dangerous place, and he is now learning how to maneuver that place. Tim, what do you think?
I think you're right. I think there's been a lot of children's literature over the years that are cautionary tales. The books of Maurice Sendak come to mind. But at the same time, they're full of fun and inventiveness and joy. And so it shows that the dark parts of our lives are not what's forefront, but the happiness that we can get from life is much more important. I would like to say that if you come to the Chesapeake Children's Book Festival, that there won't be any goat-footed balloon men there.
Oh, come on! We want you to do that so you can explain to us who this goat-footed balloon man is, and why do we react to him as being ominous when he's just a balloon man?
Who can't help it that he has goat feet.
Well, let me ask you a harder question then. Both of you, because I'm hitting a little bit at this with Peter Rabbit and with E. Cummings' poem. What makes children's literature literature? Now, I realize that's a very difficult question, but I'd like to wonder if you would wrestle around with it a little bit, because first you've got to think about what literature is, and then why is children's literature literature?
Why is children's literature literature?
Yeah.
Like all literature, it helps make sense of our humanity, our common humanity.
Exactly.
And it helps us imagine either another way out of our life situation or a problem solve. You know, because often you see in a story, whether any literature, you've got a conflict, you've got a growing problem, and they're coming. It's horrifying. They're coming, and each time the page turns, there's another one, and it's growing. Or even the what kind of footed balloon man?
Goat-footed
balloon man. You're wondering what on earth? Oh my! What is going to happen with that? You know, so it creates this suspensefulness around a central issue,
oh, yeah.
Right? And so you become curious, and you got to keep turning the pages and find out what's going to happen. And all the while, you're using your imagination, and your imagination is growing. And you're imagining things the author never put in there or even thought of, because it's just you and you're interacting with this story. And that is such a wonderful thing about being human. So your imagination is growing. I'd say that's what literature does. Sparks the imagination, keeps you thinking. You find new ways to solve your problem, develop empathy, social skills, all that.
Well,
I just wanted to add that, you know, whether it's a simple book like Go Dog Go, which uses very, very basic words, up to, you know, some incredibly well-written stories, the feeling that you get, the understanding that you get about life, it doesn't matter whether it's simple words or even wordless picture books that tell an incredible story just with the illustrations. That literature is what you learn from, what makes us human beings.
Well, we're almost out of time, and this has been, I think, a wonderful discussion. But Tim, I'd like to ask you if you would read a little bit more from one of your books. Would you mind doing that?
Okay, they're hard to read excerpts from because they're so short to begin with. Let's see, what can I do? I'll do the angry little puffin. I hope it stands up without the illustrations. What's that? Some kind of penguin? Aw, it's a sweet little penguin. That's a funny looking penguin. Hey, what a kooky little penguin. If one more person calls me a penguin, I don't know what I'll do. Look at the cute little penguin! That's it. I can't take it anymore. All day long, I hear, look at the funny little penguin, and what a silly looking penguin. I am not a penguin. I am a puffin. P-U-F-F-I-N. Puffins are definitely not penguins. It's bad enough I have to live in the penguin house at the zoo and watch their lame brain antics. People don't even read the sign on my window. They just assume I'm a penguin. I mean, there are so many differences. For one thing, penguins live in the Antarctic, near the very bottom of the Earth. Puffins live on top of the world. We're polar opposites. It makes me so mad that I could jump off a cliff. But do you know what would happen if I did? I'd fly away. That's right. Puffins can fly. Not like those dopey penguins who seem to have forgotten how. Why bother being a bird if you can't even fly? I don't know why penguins get all the attention. Toys, movies, television, even comic books. It's penguins, penguins, penguins. Come on, the puffin would be the coolest guy in any comic book. It's not fair. For once, I'd like someone to come up and say, look, it's a puffin. Look, Daddy, it's a puffin. Puffins are my favorite. They're really neat, and they live in the Arctic Ocean. This one's an Atlantic puffin. He's also called a common puffin. I think he's called a special puffin. Look how cute he is. There are other kinds, too, like the tufted puffin and the horned puffin, but I like this one best. He eats fish and squid and sand eels, and he makes his home in cliffs near the ocean. And do you know what, Daddy? He can fly, unlike those penguins over there. He's so sweet, I wish I could have a pet puffin. Wow, you sure know a lot about puffins. Let's go see if they have a toy puffin at the gift store. And then there's a picture of a very happy little puffin. Hey, what's that? It's some kind of penguin, I guess. Well, he sure is a happy little penguin.
Laura and Tim, thank you very, very much for an excellent and I think very enlightening discussion. And thank you also to Walker, Gabby, and Rooney for reading to us today. Tim, before we go, tell us once more about the festival and when it is and how people can find it.
Okay, so it's the third annual Chesapeake Children's Book Festival. It is June 16th, 2018, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. It will be in the Waterfowl Building on South Harrison Street in Easton, right across from the Art Academy Building, where the Juneteenth celebration will also be taking place at the same time.
Thanks again, and thank you all for listening to Delmarva Today, Writer's Edition. I'm your host, Harold Wilson.
You've been listening to a special writer's edition of Delmarva Today with your host, Harold Wilson. This program is produced on the campus of Salisbury University for Delmarva Public Radio. Christopher Rank is your audio engineer. Mary Seaman is the volunteer producer. Visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, for podcasts of this program.